Time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling on a Monday, and I am back in studio.
Welcome back.
So nice to see your face.
Great to see you, too.
How are you?
I sound like Nick Nolte. Thanks, allergies.
Paul's got the sexy old Hollywood voice going on.
That's really sweet of you
to
say.
I'm trying
that
to
it sounds sexy. Because I know it sounds like a cat ripped my larynx out.
But it is allergies. It's not like you went too hard over the weekend.
I mean...
Oh, yeah. I knew there'd be a...
Let's be honest. I probably did myself zero favors this weekend. But, yeah, here I am, taking all the allergy meds, doing the neti pot this morning, sitting in the shower, trying to steam it all out. And the end result is I sound like the Marlboro Man. So if you're into that, guess what, folks? 2 hours of it. Let's go.
Were you like yelling in a bar or something all weekend?
I may or may not have been yelling very loudly at the television when Duke lost because I thought it was funny. But for the most part, no. This was just, you know, the routine, doing things that are destructive to the old bod.
Right. Yeah. We've all done it.
A drink or two.
A drink or two or 12. Yeah. But we're rolling through on a Monday. And boy, it was an action-packed weekend, especially with basketball, women's and men's. Some good basketball games. The Rockets playing. We have Astros in spring training. Carlos Beltran, a name very familiar to Astros fans. And he is now with the YES Network.
Correct.
And YES is going to broadcast. It's like, who's on first? YES? YES. They're going to broadcast Yankees games, of course. So the full interview is not being released until later today.
I think 11 o'clock.
It's 11-ish. Yeah. So we may get some news on that front. But he didn't take any accountability at all when it came to the Astros cheating scandal. Basically said, quote, like, we would have stopped had we been told to stop. And this is the guy that, by all accounts, was kind of the ringleader.
Yeah.
I mean,
he spearheaded seemingly the whole thing. So when he first went into coaching, where he was doing some work with the Texas Rangers, the season 2016, towards right. the end, it stands to reason that he may or may not have brought some of the knowledge that he had in New York over there. And then, Vanessa, the story is that he came to the Astros. He thought that their sign stealing was antiquated. So he decided that he was going to make the system better. He was essentially a consultant. Came in, I guess made things better. But my understanding of Carlos Beltran with those 2017 Astros is that there were a couple of people, Brian McCann specifically, who were like, what the hell's going on here? And he would just railroad them. He and Alex Cora just railroaded everybody, didn't listen to anybody, and said, no, we're just going to keep doing this. That doesn't mean that the rest of the Astros are absolved of any blame here, but it was really interesting reading what we're going to hear Carlos Beltran say later this afternoon.
Buster only tweeting part of one of the quotes, quote, I didn't stop it the way no one stopped it. I mean, AJ Hinch took a baseball bat to a TV. My interview with Jeff Luno, whether you believe Jeff or not is up to you, but he says that he didn't know anything about it. The one thing that has stayed consistent, I will say, with every person you talk to, whether it's Correa, whether whoever talks about it, is that Beltran was a big part of it.
Yeah, and he was the veteran leader in the clubhouse. No one really wanted to challenge him on that because it was a pretty young baseball team. And he, Alex Cora, I mean, they were really pushing this on the rest of the clubhouse. And to hear Vanessa Beltran say that no one was trying to stop us, it is really funny to hear someone who was pushing this the hardest say, well, no one tried to stop me, so why was I going to stop? It was working. Because it's a pretty lame excuse, all things considered.
This is also very much a meeting with PR people, meeting with Yankees people, meeting in a boardroom that happened where they probably had some pastries and coffee and quote-unquote brainstormed on how they could bring in Beltran on the broadcast team, address this, and obviously he did the interview with somebody from YES Network.
Mm-hmm. Michael K.
Michael, yeah. So this was obviously a brainstormed thing. I just can't believe, like, I can't believe that he didn't just take the AJ Hinch approach and say, yeah, it happened. Bummer.
Well,
sorry. And now everybody loves AJ in Detroit.
It seems, Vanessa, like we've just got a concerted effort by the Yankees. And maybe this is because they know that eventually the world is going to see this letter that gives some details about what the Yankees did. And I'm sure they won't even be that explicit, but the Yankees right. are so defensive about it.
And Yankees fans.
It feels like this is how you diminish that story when it finally does fall on your doorstep. You just continuously bring up the fact, well, the Astros cheated worse. The Astros cheated the worst. And they cheated us. And they were doing, as Brian Cashman said, horrific things.
Horrific was the word he used.
Yes.
It was unlawful, horrific, like the words you would have thought that somebody got murdered.
Right. And I mean, no, it was just the Yankees who sort of killed themselves in the World Series the ALCS by not hitting because they couldn't hit anything. But forget about that. I'm tired of this. I hope that we're close to the end of the Yankees whining about something that took place 5 years ago. And I guess that this is the best way to have Carlos Beltran come onto that broadcast role, as if there are some Yankee fans who are disgusted by his time with the Houston Astros to the point that they wouldn't want to hear him every single day. Maybe that actually is the case, but it's as you said just a little bit ago, there was definitely a sit down. How do we distract people from anything that's going to make us look bad, which would include employing Carlos Beltran, and on top of that, this letter that's probably right around the corner from being released.
Absolutely, and when I covered the World Series here in October, that is the number one thing I heard Astros fans shouting loudly at Rob Manfred was, unseal the letter.
Unseal it.
It's weird that the law got involved. But regardless, we do have opening day.
Coming
we have opening day against the Angels this Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It is on the road. It begins a West Coast road trip for the Astros. And then they play here April 18th, so a little bit of a road stretch for them. But look, spring training doesn't matter for all intents and purposes, but it's cool to see Jeremy Peña showing out.
He is playing well, and I'm trying not to talk myself into anything at this point in time, but I know a lot of Astros fans have been. I was having a conversation at the bar on Friday with an Astros fan, and he was telling me, Nick, that, you know, well, look, I mean, you know, there are a lot of good things coming out of Florida about him, and I just would encourage everyone, don't put expectations
Don't idealize it the way Paul and I idealize.
Yes.
We've had this conversation.
People we barely know.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Oh, I matched with this hot person, and there's so many boxes that can be checked off. They're the one. And then all of a sudden, you go a little too hard. You freak them out. You scare them up. You don't want to do that with Jeremy Peña.
I'm good at talking you down, though.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, see, sometimes people just need to remind me of the fact that I'm crazy. You know,
Stop.
It doesn't always register until someone gives me the mirror and I'm like, oh, yeah, it's still me, Mr. Nick Nolte sounding guy.
I'm your therapist.
Do you have many expectations for Peña going into this year? Because really, it's sort of the same way for me with Davis Mills going into this season. I mean,
good comparison.
I feel like if I get anything good, neat, but I don't really feel like they're going to be tremendous difference makers, either of them.
It's a gamble that the Astros took when they decided basically, hey, we're going to go with Peña instead of this really beloved guy. And I'm not saying the Astros made a bad decision at all. We've talked about, I'm not saying it was a bad decision, but we'll see. I think that it has the potential to be what turns out to be a good move. But certainly, look, the way our minds work is in spring training when this Correa news with the Twins is still fresh. You see Peña producing. It's hard not to get your hopes up a little bit. This Astros team is strong, but there are question marks, definitely with pitching. We've talked about Lance McCullers Jr. and that rotation and what's going to happen there. And then ultimately with shortstop. So
You're right on that. And I'm
cautiously optimistic.
And it's fair to be that way. I guess you could look at it as them taking a gamble on Peña. To me, this is a lot like the time where my friends and I, for a fantasy football draft, we went to the Golden Nugget, had a great time.
Fun.
Afterwards, you know, it's a great weekend. And when we were going to go and get, like, this big, massive steak for the whole table. And one of the 12 people did not want it. So we didn't get it.
What?
Yeah, I agree. This is how I feel about the Astros not trying to do it with Correa going into this year. Like, I'm not going to be able to spin it to myself the entire rest of the season. the person who was the holdup on the big-ass steak, it's the same thing to me. This should not have been a holdup this year. It's a one-year contract. You could have had him.
Could have had the steak.
You can't tell me. Right. And now here I am years later thinking about the steak I could have had. Not because the steak would have been so tremendous, but mainly because, wait a second, what? One decision maker made us not take it? It kind of feels that way with the Astros. It's a little, feels like Jim Crane or someone was just like, nah, I just don't want to spend that much money this weekend. It's like, well, you've already spent money. We're already here. What are you doing? Go a little further.
We'll see what Jeremy Pena can do, but I know Astros fans very excited for the home opener, of course, which will be April 18th. But just to have some games after the lockout, Paul, it just seemed like it might not happen, but it is happening.
I can't wait. It does stink, though, that you know the first two series of the season, one of which was against the New York Yankees, which would be starting, if I'm not mistaken, tomorrow or today. It does kind of stink that we're not there, you know? I mean, starting with the Angels, okay, great, but I want to see the Astros against the Yankees like as many times as possible.
We love the hate and we love the vitriol between the teams. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, it is a crucial month for the Texans now that we're in April. Which NFL prospect do you have your eyes on and who do you think could fall to the Texans? That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, now that we are in the month of April, this is a huge month for the Houston Texans as the NFL draft is around the corner. It'll be in Las Vegas, April 28th through 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Going to be a fun one. Look, I mean, the past year when the Texans didn't have any super high draft picks, it's like you're watching, right? But you're not watching with the same interest for the team that you cover.
It's so much more depressing, too, because the team sucked.
Right.
You're like, wait, we don't have any picks early. Good
Thank
God.
You, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Shout out to OB, the general manager. OB, yes. The general manager. But this year is different. Obviously, the Texans rocking with some very high draft picks, the number third overall. And we'll see what they do with it. I think this draft is interesting, and we've heard this a lot, but this isn't, you know, the Andrew Luck draft or the Trevor Lawrence draft where there's the clear number one. And we all of these mock drafts have different guys going in the top five in a different order. It's fascinating. So we want to know what you have to say. Of course, you can text the text line. You can Twitch us / tweet us. The text line 713-780-3776.
There you go. 713-780-ESPN. We're getting better.
We
both have our moments where we're like, wait, what?
Yeah, but you're better at that than I am. I have to look at the number every time.
The
Hello.
Good thing is I have not thrown out the number of the old station across town.
That's
yet,
a no-no.
Or the old station in Seattle, which would have been really confusing if I threw that number out there.
I'm at Sports Vanessa. He is at Gallant Says. And, of course, our producer, Sean Mapes is in the house. So we want to know who you're looking forward to seeing as far as the NFL draft goes. Here's who my eye is on.
Ooh.
Kayvon Thibodeau.
Why?
I think that personality-wise, he's really, really interesting. I don't know if you've seen any of the interviews with him.
He definitely has a personality, which a lot of these guys seem to want to hide from the world at this point. And I don't blame them.
He is the opposite of that.
No, he's the one who compared himself to Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon Clowney 2.0 is what Thibodeau said. He's somebody that could fall to the Texans when you look at, okay, well, does Hamilton go first, Hutchinson go second, etc. Here's why he's so interesting to me. They were reading some of his quotes this morning on NFL Network and things that he has said in the past. Here's what he said on choosing Oregon over Alabama. Quote, I was thinking if I go to Alabama, I'm going to win a national championship. But do I want to be a guy who's known to be a national championship winner? Or do I want to be a guy who's known for being a part of one of the greatest organizations in the world? There's a 90% chance that if you want to, a Nike opportunity is there. There's, Thibodeau said regarding postgraduate opportunities at Oregon, quote, there's a guarantee that if you play at Oregon, you can work in the corporate Nike world. That's a guarantee.
Wow. Well, he's thinking post-career already. Sounds like he's more about the bag than
and
anything
the
else.
Brand. The
Based
brand.
Based on those quotes, yes, 100%. Because, yeah, you can go to Alabama and do the exact same thing. You can be a part of a great organization. What's Alabama?
Right.
And I'm sure that it would be a little bit different. I mean, if you get post job in Alabama, like based off of having gone to Alabama, I'm sure you would be able to get a very, very long list of jobs across that state. Oh, you played football for us. Oh, just show up for work. But what are my responsibilities?
Like that. If you're a good, sometimes college basketball player, like in my hometown, if you're a good college basketball player at Indiana State, like you're taken care of career wise.
It must be
nice.
I can
only imagine Alabama football.
Must be bleeping nice. Yeah. Okay. So Thibodeau, he's a pass rusher.
Yeah.
And I know that Aiden Hutchinson is the one that a lot of people think is going to go first overall. Doesn't sound like you mentioned Kyle Hamilton a little bit ago, but it does sound like Kyle Hamilton's sliding draft stock-wise, because I guess at his pro day, he ran a really slow 40 time.
He was really slow, and Kayvon Thibodeau didn't do all of the nuts and bolts at the NFL Combine, and his interviews might not have helped him. In addition to that, Kayvon Thibodeau was less explosive in his last couple of games, which people noticed and kind of took as him maybe checking out a little bit. So there's pros and cons, but with the Texans, you have to look at all these top guys because depending on the order, as long as the Texans don't trade away. So what say you? Who are your eyes on?
You know, I just can't help it. It's always about the quarterbacks. And with Malik Willis launching up into the collective consciousness over the last couple of weeks, the way that he has, I can't help but just wonder, first off, where is he going to go? You know, obviously, I'm curious as to who the Texans pick, and it doesn't seem like they're going to pick a quarterback in that first round no matter what happens, even if Willis maybe slides to the second pick at 13 or Kenny Pickett or something like that. But I am curious to see where Willis falls and if the Texans actually would be making a mistake in passing on him. And, you know, that's what I'm over the next couple of weeks rewatching Davis Mills to really figure out, okay, I mean, my answer for Mills is probably not. I don't really have any, like, strong, oh, my God, he's terrible, or, oh, yeah, let's see what happens.
You don't have any hot takes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the middle, and I think that's where everyone really should be. He did show some positive signs last year, but Willis is the guy that I'm most intrigued by, and I'm curious as to if, you know, some of the mock drafts have shown Detroit taking him at number two. Well, I mean, if you're the Texans and that guy is available and has been thought of by some teams as maybe being the next guy, can you really afford to pass on him at three?
Do you think the Texans would take another quarterback?
I think that they should in this draft. I think you should always take a quarterback in the draft
until
you have one. Yeah. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean in the first round, but I think you just keep on spinning the, you know, spinning the wheel and hope that you bring in a guy that's actually going to be worthy of being your long-term starting quarterback. And, you know, Mills is not definitively that now, and I don't think anyone should assume that.
See, with the Texans, though, they're so into culture and they're so into the guys that they like, they like.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that about this front office, good, bad, or indifferent. They seem to really like Davis Mills.
They do.
And they seem to want to build around him. So even though you think they should, do you think they will?
No, I don't think so. Honestly, it feels like offensive linemen would probably be the way that they go with that first pick, too. Because, all right, if you want to give this guy the best possible chance, and this is a draft where you've got some guys at the top that the kid from NC State, Okonu, who I think I just butchered his name, but he's the number one guy that's, for a lot of people, at tackle. You bring him in, and maybe at 13, you look at some of the wide receivers in this draft class, which are supposedly a pretty good draft class for wide receivers, and it seems like that's going to be the case going forward. You see the difference that Jamar Chase makes his first season with the Cincinnati Bengals. So I think that that's probably the way that they're going to go. Probably offensive lineman first, and if I had to make a bet on what position they would go after second, I think wide receiver is a pretty good one to think about too, especially if you're potentially going to trade Brandon Cooks, which has been rumored over the last couple of weeks.
Looking at Lance Zierlein's mock drafts has been interesting for sure. He's the one guy that's on it. I see his from, I wonder if this is the most recent one, March 8th. He has Icky going first.
Okay.
And then Evan Neal, Trayvon Walker,
I like that
going
he's Icky
to the Texans at three, Kyle Hamilton, Trevor Penning. I mean, but like we've talked about, every mock draft is so different this year just because of there's not that one guy that's going to be number one.
Really, there isn't. I think that also. I mean, I guess Aiden Hutchinson is, but I don't know that he necessarily should be. I feel like whenever I watched him, you know, on Saturdays where Michigan football was on, I felt like he jumped off the screen. But then I also have deep within me a bias against Big Ten football, a bias against the Big Ten, because I always feel like it's just outside of Ohio State, it's just a little bit slower athletically. You know, it's not meant to demean the great Big Ten, but I've always felt like you can
some athletes jump out a little bit more in that conference more than they would in, say, the SEC or something like that.
And I hate Ohio State, but I do. I mean, it's the Midwest farm boys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different vibe than SEC.
Corn-fed man. Large man. Jason Momoa size. Vanessa.
I love Jason Mimosa.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, NCAA championship happening tonight. You got Kansas. You got UNC. Who do you like for that matchup?
I feel like if you're UNC, how the hell do you follow this up? You just beat Duke. You're beating Duke twice this year. This year is about you beating Duke. I get it. Hey, you made it to the national title. You should be able to reset. But how do you come down from that emotional high where afterwards some people on Duke aren't shaking your hand? This is amazing. If you're any of those players, I think it's going to be difficult to refocus. And, you know, one of the things that I remember from last year's Final Four, when the Zags beat UCLA in that incredible game, it felt like they didn't have the same energy against Baylor for the next
right.
game. And Baylor just beat the hell out of them. And Kansas is just a machine. I mean, they pulled Villanova apart in that game. And, you know, Villanova was outgunned a little bit. I think Kansas is going to win this one. If I'm the UNC, I don't know how I get my focus back after an emotional high of a Saturday night. Even if I have a great coach, you have a first-year coach. How you recenter everybody after something like that?
It's been 14 years since Kansas won the NCAA championship. Bill Self, of course, at the helm. It felt like destiny for that Duke-UNC game to be a really good game. I was a little worried that it was going to be overhyped and then one was going to end up blowing out the other. But sure enough, it came down really to the last couple of shots. I tweeted this. It had Bills Chiefs AFC divisional playoff vibes, where it was like, who's going to get the ball first? That's who's going to win. But Hubert Davis beating Mike Krzyzewski. I know Davis has been with UNC basketball for a while, but it being his first year as head coach, to see that battle. And I love Coach K. I've always been a huge Coach K fan, but man, he was pissed.
Yeah. And I mean, who can blame him? And afterwards, I'll give him credit. He didn't tell anyone to shut up at his press conference or do anything extremely condescending with any of the players on UNC. It seems like he handled it with a lot of grace, and good for him. I mean, he had an incredible career, no matter how much we want to dump on the guy. I do think, though, coming out of that and looking at all these Duke fans watching the game, I'm not going to lie, I found a contingent of Duke fans at a bar, and it was it was a little funny to just see the looks,
the sadness
in their eyes. There is one person in particular who I saw at Wicklow Heights on Saturday afternoon, and he was wearing a Duke shirt, and I was just like, good God, this is like the fan equivalent of Grayson Allen, of J.J. Redick. He's just this... He went to an engagement party. He's the only person that wasn't wearing, like, nice clothes
to
this engagement
party. Yeah, that's annoying.
He was wearing a blue Duke t-shirt, and he just had this smug look...
Read the room.
...on his face, and I was just like, you know what? Thank you. Thank you, God, for showing me this person today, because I can recenter my hate against him. I just looked at him, and I was like, I hope he cried. After he had like three or four bourbons watching that game, I hope he teared up and cried watching that team lose.
Yeah, read the room too with the dress code. My God.
I agree. Right. I mean, look, everyone was super dolled up. And then here's this guy. Look, I get it.
You can wear blue, though. He could have worn a blue dress shirt.
Or wear like a Duke polo or something like that. But no, it was just, it was schleppy.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, now that Coach K is retired, who's the best coach in sports? And we're going to talk about the Houston Rockets as well. Stay tuned. That's next.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we got the national championship coming up tonight. Of course, UNC taking on Kansas. Should be a good one, we were talking about in the last segment. But one of the bigger storylines, of course, was Coach K retiring. The amount of tributes, the amount of ISO shots of he and his wife catching the game, of course,
and
his
wife sitting there. They're driving away in the golf cart.
It was very dramatic.
What a sad golf cart.
But he's done. UNC, Hubert Davis ended his career as he went on his big retirement tour.
Hubert is such a bad name for all the Huberts out there. What were you
not
thinking?
A great name.
What were your parents thinking?
You should sue them right now.
Do you feel bad for people who have bad names?
Yes.
Because it's like, it's not their choice.
No, it's their terrible parents' choice. And I mean, we're getting some really terrible ones these days with all of these, you know, people our age and younger.
Oh, God, it's horrible. And it's the spelling, too.
Yes. Nothing is ever going to beat the LaDasha, where there was a dash in the name. I mean, nothing's ever going to beat. That's like the greatest, perhaps, name of all time. But, oh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing some names out there like Paisley. And I mean, it's just like, wow.
Brexton.
Mimosa. I name my child after my favorite drink, which is ranch water. Ranch water.
It'll be like Jaylee, and it'll be spelled J-A-Y-L-E-I-G-H.
I name my child LaCroix.
It's just so bad.
I love LaCroix, and he reminds me so much of my best self when I have my LaCroix.
See, I like my name because it's not super common. It's
I like
not like Ashley or Jessica or but it's like you still know how to spell it. You still know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, exactly. And mine's easy. Paul.
Yeah.
Not too common. Named after Paul McCartney. Am I the biggest fan of that? The biggest Paul McCartney guy. But, yeah, Paul's simple.
Do you like the Beatles?
Not really.
You're named after Paul McCartney.
I know. I mean, it's mainly, you know, John Lennon was terrible, so, you know.
That's true. I actually, my Beatles hot take is that George Harrison's my favorite Beatle.
George Harrison,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, he was not Ringo.
No.
Is he the drummer?
No, but he's saying, no, Ringo's the drummer.
Okay.
George Harrison is the one that he had a great solo career. He had.
Yeah.
Who named
Ringo Ringo?
Wait, I wonder what Ringo's real name was.
I hope it's Ringo.
Ringo Starr, real name.
I mean, that's.
Oh, his real name was Richard Starkey.
Oh, okay. So he just seemed, you know, I mean, some people might have called him Dick.
That's true.
I mean, that's what happens from time to time.
Ringo Starr is better than Dick Starkey.
My nephew is named Richard after his grandfather, Dick, but we're not allowed to call him Dick, which good luck with that, Sass.
Yeah, I was going to say. all right. Well, with the national championship happening tonight and, of course, Coach K's retirement, you asked an interesting question, which I think is definitely worth asking. Who are the most powerful coaches in sports now that Coach K is done?
Right. And who's doing the best? Because it's starting to change for a lot of the top coaches across sports these days. I don't think you could say Greg Popovich is that guy anymore in the NBA with the San Antonio Spurs. Still definitely respect what he's done over the course of his career. Pete Carroll with the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, they just had a losing season. Bill Belichick with the New England Patriots. The last 2 years, they've been a 500 football team in totality. Who is the guy that's at the top? Because Coach K and a lot of these college basketball guys have been consistent a really long time. I know Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, they're coming off a losing season. You can't put him up there anymore. The only one I could think of, Vanessa, as far as like the most powerful coach in sports who's still delivering every single year is Nick Saban.
Yeah, my answer is Bill Belichick, but if you're talking about like recently, obviously that success has not been there. I think that when he does retire, the totality of his career, the amount of Super Bowls, the way that he was able to do something with nothing, and then all of a sudden he has the, you know, Tom Brady, the GOAT, as his quarterback, and they're able to have some unbelievable success
together.
Helped
out a little bit.
A little bit. So, for me, it's Bill Belichick, but you do have to take into consideration the fact that the last few years haven't been what they were.
No, they really haven't. I suppose you could go to the world of college basketball, and you could point to college basketball on the women's side of things with Gina Auriemma. But I know that South Carolina beat UConn.
Yeah, Dawn Staley's really made a name for herself.
But UConn,
legend.
UConn is legitimately always there. So, I mean, that's one. But, all right, say we're not talking about women's sports here. Most dominant coach, longest period of time. Outside of Nick Saban, I do think as far as guys who are still throwing 110 on the radar gun, like Belichick, I can't say he's doing that anymore. And part of that has to do with the fact that his general managing has been rather shaky as far as drafting has gone and stuff. So, baseball, it's a little different because who do you think of really in the world of baseball as far
like
as
managers?
Power. Yeah, because managers are generally extensions of the actual general manager upstairs. And in basketball, we're seeing
less coaches that are with one team for a really long period of time, because now guys are just getting blown out all the time, so that you can appease, insert star player X, and maybe lure him to your squad.
I like this answer from 4127. He says Mike Tomlin. I think Tomlin would have to probably win another Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Tomlin, you know, if he can make something happen with Mitch Trubisky, and they're really, really good. I mean, they haven't had the Steelers haven't had a losing season in a very long time.
That's true.
Tomlin is a good answer. Nick Saban has veto power over the governor, says 1194. I actually don't doubt that.
I wouldn't either. Some people, one of my friends just texted in, Bill Self, dummy. That's a pretty obvious one, with the way that things are going right now. I do got to say, though, with Kansas, considering their clout as far as basketball royalty, they have had a lot of underwhelming performances in the NCAA tournament over the last 20 years. That's not to say that Bill Self has been terrible, but, you know, also, I mean, Bill Self picking up where, what, Roy Williams left off too? So
yeah.
It's not like it's all been Bill Self, where Nick Saban single-handedly resurrected an Alabama program that was far from, you know, when I was growing up, Alabama was kind of like, okay, you know, they weren't the program that we remember them from, I guess people older than me remembered from way back in the day. So Self definitely doing a good job. And, you know, he wins a national title, he puts himself firmly back into this conversation. But it is weird, you know, college basketball too, because now, yeah, Coach K leaves, Roy Williams left. The guys that you remember, Coach K seems like he's on the hot seat. Not Coach K. Coach Calipari seems like he's on the hot seat.
That lifetime contract may not be lifetime.
No. No, but I mean, how do you buy him out on that front? I'm sure that they have the money to do it. It's just, you would think that.
The transfer portal is going to change things too. Because now, I mean, look at the fact that you had now, not that Will Wade was going to be a masterful coach, but every single player left LSU.
Yeah.
For either the draft or the portal.
Do you
think that influences coaches' legacies?
Well, I mean, recruiting's a part of it on the college side of things. I don't even know that Nick Saban needs to do anything anymore. Like, I think that's how firmly established he has made himself. College basketball is so weird because, I mean, what Calipari's doing at Kentucky is the right way to do it. You're supposed to be getting the guys who want to go pro. You want to have more talent than everybody else. And sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes it doesn't gel and mesh. And clearly this season, you know, they underachieved. They lose to St. Peter's, for God's sakes. That's a pretty bad look. It's pretty embarrassing. But with them, every single year they can press the reset button and it's a little bit different. And I do think Calipari deserves credit for being able to adapt and changing the game of college basketball the way that he has, in terms of now. I mean, even Duke is okay with one and dones, and they used to be so opposed to it for such a long period of time.
Handshakes, do they matter? Back on March 5th, UNC defeated Duke in Coach K's final home game as the program's head coach. After the game, two Duke assistant coaches blew off the handshake with Tar Heels head coach Hubert Davis just a few weeks later, of course. Once again, kind of a lack of sportsmanship is the narrative from the Duke Blue Devils. Not everybody shaking hands. Here's my thing with this. I usually don't care. My issue is specifically that Duke preaches about like sportsmanship and class. And I think if you do that, you have to back it up.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially if you've got Coach K being condescending with legitimately every single person about the unwritten rules of basketball. And every single person's extreme, obviously. But you go back to Dylan Brooks after a game with, what, Providence, where he basically told him, like, you celebrated too much, or you scored while the game was in hand. You didn't need to do that. You're right, 100%. No, at least Coach K went around shaking people's hands. That would have been something else if you retire your last game ever and you just refuse to give handshakes. But there's also a part of me, too. I think that we get a little bit too worked up over the handshake side of things. I think you are obligated as someone, if you've played sports, to swallow your pride and to go over to the other person and shake hands. But at the same time, too, put yourself in the shoes of somebody who just lost to their arch rival. You probably hate those people. And you've played them now four times this season. I can understand why somebody maybe wouldn't go over. It's a worse look, though, when it's Duke that does it. I just think it is funny because I wonder when the handshake first became a thing. I know in the Enlightenment era, during the wars that were being fought, like with this such proper primp and pomp and circumstance back in the 1700s, where everyone would like march up to each other, take turns shooting each other until eventually someone lost.
Wow, we're going deep in history here. And Vanessa then, and Gallant, for your history lesson.
And then afterwards, the officers were obligated to shake each other's hands because it was all about the officers being gentlemanly, even though all these poor,
you
That's
know what.
That's how handshakes started?
Listen, I don't know if this is what's led to post-game handshakes in athletic events, but I'm trying to think of why we do this. Because you would think generally when one side beats another, that the one side is going to continue to beat up on the other, and the other might not want to shake their hand. But I feel like 1700s warfare may have been where this handshake started. I should go on a really deep dive.
You should. Handshakes, do they matter? Do they not? Did they start with people killing each other in the war? Who's to say? All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, McAfee shows out in WrestleMania. We're going to talk a little bit of Rockets. That's next.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, hey, we're rolling along on Monday. My name is Vanessa Richardson. We got Paul Gallant, as always, and then our producer, Sean Mapes, doing a wonderful job. Sean, the history of handshakes, because Paul said that it happened in the war in the 1700s. He thought maybe that was
it was a floating theory.
The onus of handshakes in sports.
Not just the war, like any war.
The war, I think, is what you said. You're only off by 2,000 years. One of the earliest depictions of handshakes was found in the 9th century BC relief, which shows a Syrian king,
Timothy Shalamai.
Yeah, some Assyrian king pressing the flesh with a Babylonian ruler to seal an alliance. The Iliad and the Odyssey also had handshakes to relate pledges and displays of trust.
Okay.
So, way back.
Intimate.
In the war, back in 2000
way
BC.
Way back.
Between Assyria and Babylon.
Yeah.
Babylon?
Do handshakes... Babylon. Did you... I mean, you grew up going to church school, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
What does that mean?
You said Babylon.
Yeah, I know. I forgot for a second because I was about to say Babylonians, but I was like, oh, yeah, it's Babylon, right?
It is Babylon. Pat McAfee, by the way, somebody that's made headlines over the years for his media career, not playing, comedy, all of that. He took part in WrestleMania last night. I don't know if you guys saw this. Heck of an intro. He had Dallas. He had some Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders because it was in Dallas. Definitely made a name for himself.
That's a good way to do an introduction.
It was fun, yeah.
Get some Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders with you.
Wasn't bad.
WrestleMania is something I've never gotten into, but I realize how big of a deal it is every single year when it takes place. And it makes me wish that as a kid, Vanessa, that I was allowed to watch wrestling. One of many things that I was not allowed to. I know, Mom. Come on, Dad. Why am I not allowed to watch men wearing, like, underwear grapple with each other, you know? Why wasn't I allowed to do that? Or see some person give the, you know, chop to the groin or any of the things that The Rock used to say. It doesn't matter what your name
is. The people's eyebrow.
Right. All of those things. I could have had so many references that would only be understood by a very small portion of the population. But maybe at some point I do need to watch it. Obviously, we've seen Rob Gronkowski go into that world. Is it bad that I want to see people go in to be essentially like cannon fodder, famous people to go in and be that? Because I remember, I think, you know, to his credit, a man who is known to have quite the ego. I feel like Donald Trump went in there once.
Yeah, he does have an ego, but I think he'll also do a lot of different things for attention. Stone Cold Steve Austin was there last night. Roman Reigns, Jake Paul. So which current...
Jake Paul, who had like a $5 million Pokemon card...
I cannot deal.
...around his neck.
I hate him so much. Both of the Paul brothers. So obnoxious.
They are, but they keep
it's,
bringing
no,
you
it
back.
No, it works. I mean, it's like the Kardashians.
Because you want to see them get their ass kicked. That's the whole point. And they've marketed people watching them, hoping they will get their ass kicked. I mean, it's genius, and they never fight anybody who quite has the ability to do it in the world that they get into.
Which current or former NFL player would you like to see participate in WrestleMania? You mentioned Gronk's the obvious answer. Gronk's kind of done it before. But which current or former NFL player would you like to see participate in this?
Okay, well, Aaron Donald would be cool in there. I want to see J.J. Watt try to impersonate John
Cena.
J.J.
Watt was my pick. Yeah.
To a T. But more than anything, Vanessa, I want to see Jackson Mahomes go in there and just get the hell beaten out of him. You know what? And that would do great for, I think, rebranding himself. You know, he's trying to make people like him again. Well, I think, if you know, you go out there and let a bunch of wrestlers take out the world's frustrations on you in a fake way. You wouldn't get actually beaten up, but just have him like tossing him from one corner of the ring to the other and stuff while he tries to do a TikTok dance in between. I think that would be really special. And it would bring our country together in these unprecedented times.
In these unprecedented times, yeah. My pick would be J.J. Watt. And I say that not only because he played in Houston, but because of his build, because of the fact that he is so into his brand and so into social media, you know that he would promote the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. would be somebody that I would like to see participate in WrestleMania. Is he too wholesome, though?
No, he's perfect. Like, there's always a wholesome guy.
Yeah, that's
from
true.
What I know. How about you bring in James Harden in there, and it's the same thing, and he could be a sumo wrestler, like where he's wearing his "I'm trying to get out of Brooklyn" fat suit. I'm trying to get out of Philadelphia, maybe next fat suit. I got out of Houston fat suit. You know, put him out there. He can dress up in some sumo style. We can see what he's got. Why not him? He's a big guy.
We got somebody on the text line that had the perfect answer. 712128 says Antonio Brown would fit right in. Yes, he would.
Oh, yeah. Antonio Brown. But I don't think they would trust Antonio Brown to go along with the script.
Right. That's the problem, is that he would flip it.
It could be good, though, because you could have, I mean, it's the craziest thing that we've seen in a football game in like decades, was Antonio Brown just stripping down and dancing his way off the field and waving to the crowd in New York. I don't think we've ever seen something like that. Although on Friday, Vanessa, I'm barely watching the Rockets game at a bar, and all of a sudden I saw some guy get to center court, and he just got absolutely bundled, and then the broadcast shifted away and started talking about like notes around the NBA and like this big graphic took up the whole
shout
screen.
Out to AT&T Southwest.
Well, I guess this guy's done this a lot, where he like strips naked. And I what's funny is the last time he did it, at least per what I read in the Houston Chronicle, was at a Ross Dress for Less, where he just went streaking at Ross.
Did he get arrested?
I'm assuming yes, and that's how they found out about it. But this guy, I mean, he likes to go out and express himself by stripping down to his skivvies. And, you know, good for him, right? I mean, this is how you could potentially become a celebrity someday. It's just to be the streaking guy. Now you can build your own TikTok brand off of that. Keep on happening. All right.
Can you, though? Because, like, I feel like that happens all the time now. Like, people streak all the time.
They do. But if you're really good at it, then you could become, like, the top shelf version. You could become an A-list celebrity. He was wearing, like, he has a top knot going on. And he was wearing an American flag Speedo, black Vans, and calf-length black Adidas socks. Seabass Perez is his name. He's a well-known professional bodyboarder from California. He put his Instagram handle on his back. So this was 100% an attention move. He only has 44,000 followers on Instagram. So I guess he will have more. But the last week, he did the same thing, stripping down to the same Speedo at a Ross Dress for Less store. He was politely asked to leave the store, but it didn't end quite so well for him because he got absolutely bundled out there.
I like the Houston Chronicle's coverage of it. They have amazing pictures. Bob Levy via Getty Images on Houston Chronicle's website. The look on the Rockets players' faces as this guy is on the court is absolutely hysterical.
It is pretty funny to see, but at the same time, you're probably a little freaked out that somebody has such ease of access to run onto
the
court.
That's a good point, yeah.
His evasion skills were pretty lacking. You know, it was a pretty easy to take him down. I feel like if you get out there, you at the very least have to make the security guards run and possibly embarrass themselves along the way. Because if you're a security guard, the last thing you want to do is to tackle some guy who's not wearing any clothes. Like, no guy wants to any part of that. It's kind of gross.
How drunk/high do you have to be to do this? And to know that you're going to get arrested, to know that you're a repeat offender, and it's all worth it for what? Followers? Laughs?
I think for followers is why you do it. And you've seen, I mean, there is this Instagram model, Julia Rose, who has done this at multiple sporting events.
That's right.
And she
100% is doing it for the publicity. May or may not have dated one of the Pauls recently. Why do you think she was doing that? Could it have been for the publicity? I can't say. Some people are all about that life.
He uploaded the video on Instagram and said those bounces were definitely not push and pee.
But he got bundled. And look, good for him. He's got a brand. And we are all here for maximizing your brand here on the Vanessa and Golan radio show. Unless you're Jackson Mahomes, then we want you to just get bundled.
Yeah, if you're doing it, like, and to his credit, he put the @ on his back, the @ sign, so people could follow him on Instagram. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we talk about the Astros, Carlos Beltran's controversial but yet not surprising comments as we inch towards opening day. That's next.
ESPN 97.5.